Okay, we are holding on Nun Testament Aleph, last line, and now we are going to learn and get into one of the most famous stories in Shas, the story of Tanur Shalach Noi, the story of Rabbi Eliezer versus the Chacham. Tanan Hasam, we learn, and the reason why the Gemara is bringing it in over here is because since we were talking about Anas Dvarim, we're going to see, as the story progresses, we're going to see the relevance of that. Tanan Hasam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim. Now, the Torah tells us that an oven, that an earthenware oven, is able to become tameh, even though it's usually attached to the ground. Usually things attached to the ground can become tameh. An earthenware oven is an exception. There's various ways in which the Torah also tells us when an earthenware oven becomes tameh, you break it, and then that makes it tahor. So there's various details that it discusses in the Masechta Kelim, various ways that an oven can be made where it's not makabel tumah in the first place. So where, if it was tameh, it becomes tahor.
Explain the Talmud why, if it's attached to the floor, things are generally not tameh. Can be done in the kabel tumah.
No, because usually the ground itself is not makabel tumah. The ground itself is not makabel tumah, therefore neither usually can things attach to it. Okay.
The ground is kind of like the ground.
Okay.
This is the one exception.
All right. Onward. So the Mishnah says in the Masechta Kelim, if you took an earthenware oven, now their ovens usually were shaped like something like this. With the top cut off. So there's an opening on the top, a larger opening on the bottom, and you'd bake and cook things inside it. Yeah. So, if you took such an oven and cut it into rings, so you cut it into several horizontal rings, stacked one on top of the other, and you put sand between one ring and the next. So you cut it up, you pile the rings one on top of the other, and between one ring and the next you put sand. And then afterwards you coated the whole thing, as you usually do with an oven.
You put sand
between the rings, yes. You have a ring, sand, more another ring, and more sand, etc.
Just
regular sand, preposterous. And then you coat the whole thing with clay. Rabbi Eliezer says such an oven is tahor in the sense it's not makabel tumah because no longer considered a kli cheres. It's no longer an earthenware utensil. It's now considered, Rashi says, like a building that you built, basically. The chachamim say it's still makabel tumah. Because the Chachamim say it's true, fine, you have the sand in between, but basically you still have each piece is like a mini oven in itself, and when you have afterwards you smear it with clay so it retains its heat. That whole thing, that the clay coating makes it like one big. It makes all the rings.
Even if the rings less than a
tefach. Yeah, that's what it's four tefach actually is when it comes to an oven. But whatever, the point is that the zehu tanur shel Achnoi. This is the oven of Achnoi. My Achnoi, so why is it called the Tanur Shel Achnoi? So Tosfos brings that actually it may have been the name of the person who made such ovens, but the point is the Gemara is asking, fine, but why is it important to us generation to know the name of the manufacturer of the oven? The reason is...
What is the Rashi there?
Rashi says, well, wait, Nachash Darkei Lachas Vigula, a snake often goes in a ring, Lachas Nava, it's a pig that he puts his tail into his mouth. There's certain kinds of snakes. I don't know. We learned about that at the end of Rav Kama, for example, the story of Rav Kahana, where there was a snake in a circle like that in front of his burial cave that wouldn't allow anybody to come in later on in our sector. We'll have other such cases.
Bigula
in a circle, yeah. So Mayach, a snake that lies in a circle, with its tail near its mouth.
So that's just the name of it.
Yeah, so Mayach, why are we calling this oven the Tanur Shel Achnoi? It means they surrounded it with words and with arguments like a snake over there in a circle. And they ended up declaring Talmud that's able to be makabel tumah. Some of them are farshim saying, in other words, in the sense somewhat different than what Rashi says over here about the tail being in the mouth, but rather the figure of speech is like you have certain kinds of snakes that squeeze their prey. They coil themselves around it tightly. So the same thing, like they coil down around this and then argue back and forth and eventually declare it tummy, like there's no way out of it.
The meaning of achnum.
An achnum is a type of snake.
It's a snake.
Yeah. Tana. So now, yeah. We learn in a braisa, but also Hayom Heshiv Rabbi Eliezer called Shuvah Shavolim. On that day, Rabbi Eliezer brought all the arguments in the world that he could use, any argument that he could use to say that this oven should not be makabel tumah. But the Chachamim did not accept any of these arguments from him. Eventually, once he ran out of arguments in halacha, Amar lahem, im halacha kamosi, if the halacha is like me, charuv zeh yechiyach, then this carob tree that's standing here near the Bais Medrash should prove it. The carob tree was uprooted from its place and moved 100 amos. Some say it moved 400 amos.
Showing that it was not like that.
Showing on the contrary that nature is changing for my sake. So you see that shows that what a level I'm on. That you should understand. Halacha is like me. They said, okay, but you can't bring an ayah from a carob tree.
This must have been frustrating.
Well,
first of all,
what
for carob? It was a mess. Why don't
we
say we cannot
deprive halacha? Turtle, Levishmaimi, we're going to get to soon. Wait. First, let's go through the story, then we can start analyzing. Let's go through the story, then we can start analyzing. Next, Amalahem. Chazav Amalahem, then he says to them, Im halacha kamosi amasamayim yechichu. If the halacha is like me, the water channel should prove it. Chazav amasamayim lacharim. The water started flowing backwards. And again, you can't bring a proof from a channel of water.
Very nice.
You're a Jehovah Nayid. You're a very high level person. You deserve the Eibishter should do nisim on your behalf. It doesn't necessarily mean the halacha is like you. Chazav amalahem. Then he says yet again to them, im halacha kamosi kos lebeis medrash shechichu. If the halacha is like me, the walls of the Bais Medrash should prove it. Hitu kos lebeis medrash lipo. So the walls of the Bais Medrash started tilting.
They're getting ready to fall.
Wait. That's in a couple of lines. Yeah. Gar behem Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua started yelling at the wall. Amar lahem. He says to them, if Tamar HaChamim are campaigning and arguing against each other in halacha, atem matibchem. What's it your business? What are you mixing in over here? So, lo naflim if they kvod Yeshua Rabbi Yeshua. So the wall did not fall down because of the honor of Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua told them to mix out. The Lord Zokrum takes the tradition of Rabbi Eliezer. They didn't stand up straight again, though, because of the covet of Rabbi Eliezer, who told them to fall. Vadayin matin v'omrim, so those walls are still standing there at an angle. And until this day, no. I mean, by now, the building over there... What? This was in Yavne. The Baptist was in Yavne. So does the building that they lived in Yavne still exist? Probably not, but yeah. Avadayin, at least at the time when this braisa was written, when the whole story was written, it still existed that way. What it means, by the way, what it means that he's bringing raias from all these things. There are some of the mefarshim who say, I think the Maharal says, for example, that not necessarily did this all actually happen in the physical world, but rather, for example, the Gemara means it symbolically. A lot of these types of gemaras that have weird things like these happening. You have Mephoshim will explain that maybe the Chachamim saw this in a vision or a dream or something, not necessarily that it happened. L'masa Ma'asar Tzvachim. But there's other explanations also. There's a Vart, I think that's brought from the Vilna Gaon, that he wanted to say there's three things about the Talmud Chacham. There's three qualities the Talmud Chacham needs to have. He needs to be an onav. He needs to be mistapik b'mu'at. He doesn't. He's not greedy. He doesn't need a lot. He can live on very little. And then he learns Torah l'shma. So he's saying, I can prove. I have abilities. I'm going the right way in all these three things. That should mean that I have siyata d'shmaya. That halacha should be like me. The choruv represents making do with very little. A famous thing, for example, that the Gemara says about Rav Chanina ben Dosa, said that he would live off a cow. He and his family would live off a calf of carobs from 1 week to the next. So carobs is like the ultimate poor man's food.
What about who was it?
There are many choruv lived off carobs and water while he was in the cave. Yeah,
he was very wealthy.
Yeah, okay. The Nassim in general world, but yeah. The water represents humility. Mayim yodim makam gavoyel makam namach. They flow downhill. So like the, yeah. And the coast of this medrash represent learning Torah l'shma. So each of these things he's trying to bring as a proof that the halacha ought to be like me because I learn Torah in the right way. And he said, then they're telling him, very nice, you're Jehovah Nayid, you're a great person, but you go according to the majority. Now, the real question is, of course, I mean, didn't Rabbi Eliezer know that Acharam Lahatas, what is he thinking over here? So the Yerushalmi actually has an expression, the Yerushalmi tells the story also in Moed Katan. It says, because Rabbi Eliezer objected to the fact, or later on in the story we're going to see, they took things that Rabbi Eliezer had declared tahor and burnt them. So either it means Rabbi Eliezer was machbid on that, because he felt then they're not doing it l'shem shemai, and he thought they're just doing it like in order to start a fight or whatever. Or it meant he was machbid on the fact that you're taking things which have been assumed to be tahor, that the truma, other things like that, and Yisrael, and just going and burning them and declaring things tomei for no good reason. So therefore, whatever it is, then he felt that maybe in that case, Akhiram Mahathir doesn't apply over here.
Because
he said, yeah. There is an interesting idea that Rabbi Isaac HaLevi brings in his Sefer on Jewish history, Derus HaRishonim. He says, if you look at the historical situation at that time, he says, the Roman emperor of that time, a fellow named Domitian, was extremely anti-Semitic. There's Gemaras and Midrashim in various places that tell how he was thinking to destroy the whole Jewish people, and Nissim happened to prevent that from taking place. Therefore, he says, the Chachamim decided at this point it's too dangerous to have all the Chachamim assemble together in Yavne. The Romans, who knows what the Romans are likely to make of it. They're assembling together to plan a rebellion or whatever. Better what we should do is let most of the Chachamim go home. We'll keep a skeleton crew over here. We'll keep a small number of Chachamim over here on a day-to-day basis. That being the case, Rabbi Eliezer figured he was what's called the Chacham Avad. He was genuinely responsible for Piskei Halacha in practice. So therefore, he figured in that case, then the Akhiram Mahathis doesn't apply. If all the Chachamim were here, if all 72 Chachamim were here, maybe they would agree with me. But the other Chachamim are answering, okay, it's true, we only have a small number over here, but Akhiram Mahathis applies even under these circumstances. Doesn't say. According to him, it may have just been the few. Derus HaRishonim, it's called. It's a seven-volume series on Jewish history. It's polemical, but it's quite interesting. Polemical means that a lot of it is devoted to arguing against various secular Jewish historians and their ideas on Jewish history. The Sefer HaDvarim has a lot of interesting ideas. Anyway. One other thing I should mention, there's a vort that Steinsaltz brings from Rabbi Shlomo Mocha, the famous Mekobol from the time of the Beis Yosef, who was killed by Kedush Hashem, that Rabbi Eliezer wanted to bring proofs from all four parts of existence, Domim, Tzemeach, Chai, and Medaber. So the water is Domim, the carob tree is Tzemeach, the walls of the Bismedrish are Medaber, and we're going to see in a second, he asked for a Baskol to assist him also. Well, it doesn't matter. It should represent the gather that the people over there sit and learn Torah. Yeah. He continues. He says to them, "Fine. If the halacha is like me, then it's that mina shemayim they should prove it." Wait. Yotza baskov amra. So baskov comes out and says, "Malachem etzel Rabbi Eliezer. What are you doing? Arguing against Rabbi Eliezer? Shalacha kamosi b'chol makom. The halacha is always like him." Amad Rabbi Yeshua Raglov, famous thing, Rabbi Yeshua stood up on his feet. Amad, he said, Loi b'shamayim. The Torah is not in Shemayim. My Loi b'shamayim, what do you mean? Amad Rabbi Yemiya, Shekvar nitna Torah me'har Sinai. By now, the Torah has been given from Har Sinai. Ein ona mashgichim b'baskol. From now on, we do not pay attention to a baskol. Shekvar kasavta b'har Sinai b'Torah acharam l'atas. Because you already wrote in the Torah at Har Sinai that you go according to the majority. Now, again, you have to ask the question, didn't Rabbi Eliezer know that turtle of Shemayni? What's Rabbi Yeshua's? What's Rabbi Yeshua's? So actually, Tosfos points out over here that actually, not in that same period, there was a baskol that the Chachamim paid attention to. There's a baskol, we learned in Yuvamis, that there was a baskol that came out and said the halacha is like a silo.
Right.
And we generally follow that. The difference is, Tosfos says, because here the baskol was coming to contradict what the Torah says. The Torah says, Akhiram Mahathis, and the baskol is coming and saying, ignore that, go like Rabbi Eliezer. Over there, it was coming to confirm what we already know. Rabbi Silol is already the majority. For that reason alone, the halacha should be like them. The baskol came to confirm, you're doing the right thing. Don't think, even though the Gemara says that the Shammai were sharper, etc., don't think maybe the halacha should be like them. You should know you're correct in following the majority. Besides, over here, maybe only the baskol came out because of the covet of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said, "Shemayim yechichu," so a baskol came to help him. Not necessarily that we should follow that.
Interesting. Right?
Well, I'll tell you, there is an interesting thing that Rebbe once pointed out in a sicha. Again, Rabbi Eliezer knew full well that you can't that total of Shemayim. what's he expecting to prove with his baskel? The vort is, he's saying, in the sense, once you, other chachamim, hear this baskel, you yourselves will realize in your own brains that the halacha should be like me, and therefore you will yourselves come to the independent conclusion in your own mind that this is how it must be. Alderach, like the Rebbe says, when you hear something from your Rebbe, and then it gets into your own brain, you make it part of yourself, and you make it, you know, it becomes your own svara as well. That's what he was expecting to happen. And yet, Rabbi Yeshua says, standing up and says, very nice, but we don't. So nish up the lake by rooms and seichel. It has not penetrated our seichel in that way. So therefore, fine. The Baskel says, but with our own brains, we perceive differently. Gemara continues. Ashkechei Rav Nosson Eliyahu, Rav Nosson, who lived in a later generation, met Eliyahu Anavi. So he asked, what did the Eibush do at that time? They're disobeying the Baskel. The Eibush Kavyachol smiled and said, "Nitzchuni bonai, nitzchuni bonai. My children have beaten me. My children have beaten me." Meaning, well, so actually, the nitzchuni, they beat me. They overpowered. They overpowered me. Meaning, in other words, there's a number of different explanations on this, but one of them, Reb Nissim Gaon, says that what it means is the Eibush was testing them with his Baskel, and they passed the test. Yeah. There's actually a different one of them before Shmuel says Faker, that the Eibush is saying, you know what? It's true, they Taka didn't come to the right conclusion. Perhaps in the halacha should be like Rabbi Eliezer. But since I Taka wrote in the Torah Acher Am Lahatis and they're following that, fine, let it be that way. In fact, Rabbi Shlomo Mocho also says another vote on this. He says that maybe Mi'ikra din the oven should Taka not be Makabel Toma. The Chachamim are saying it should be Mitzadik Zera. So fine, Rabbi Eliezer is right, in the Ekim din, it shouldn't be Makabel Toma. But since the Chachamim have a valid reason for making this Zera, then okay, the Eibush is willing to go along with it. Amru, so they said, Oysayim have you called Taras Shatir Rabbi Eliezer. On that day, they brought all the things that Rabbi Eliezer had previously declared to her, the Sorfim Ra'esh, and they burnt them. Because now, why are they making such a big deal? Well, v'nimnu olahu berchuhu, and then they voted, and berchuhu is a nice way of saying that they put him in nidui, or Tosfos discusses that it made Tosfos other Rishonim. In nidui, it's a euphemism. Different Rishonim discussed whether it was actually there's three levels of putting somebody in ostracism. There's nidui, there's cherem, and there's shamta. Which was it over here? Was it just Nidui, which is the lowest one? Was it Cherem, which is more serious? As we shall see, he acted as if he was in Cherem. Or maybe even there's a few places in the Gemara where it calls Rabbi Eliezer Shamuti. And Rashi and Tosfos discuss whether Shamuti maybe means, I think Rashi says in a few places, Shamuti means Meloshin Shamta. So what was it?
It was one of those in that
means.
Well, we don't know, but again,
so different opinion. Now, why are they being so stringent about it, burning all the Taras and putting him in Nidri or whatever it is? Basically, the reason is because he's going against all the Chachamim. He's not accepting Acher Rabbim Lahatis for whatever reason that we said before. They have to take a hard line on it. As a matter of fact, some of Poshim go so far as to say that if this had been in the time when the Sanhedrin was in the Lushka Sagodis, he might well have been judged as a Zaken Mamre. So therefore, they have to take a hard line on it to prevent. Otherwise, you're going to have people are just going to follow him, and other people are going to follow the Chachamim, and you're going to end up with a split in the Jewish people. You can't have that. Okay. So now the Chachamim said, "Mi yelech v'yadiyah? Who is going to go and inform Rabbi Eliezer of this decision?" So Rabbi Akiva, who himself was Rabbi Eliezer's Talmud before, said, "I will go." Shema yelech adam sheinei hogun, because otherwise somebody who's not so good might go. The idea, and tell him straight out, instead of I will tell him in a delicate way, and destroying the whole world, because he'll upset Rabbi Eliezer so much that it'll have a bad effect.
He was a senior of...
He was older. Rabbi Akiva may have been older than... I don't know.
No, he was older.
Rabbi Eliezer was older than Pastor, but Rabbi Akiva was one of Rabbi Eliezer's top Talmidim. By this time, he wasn't even considered a Talmid of his anymore. By this time, he's really a chover of his at this point, but he's still, yeah. Ma also Rabbi Akiva, what did he do? Lava shchurim and nisatik shchurim. He dressed in black and wrapped himself in black, which is what somebody who is in nidui does. So as if to say, like, I'm the one, like I and the other chachamim are the ones in nidui, out of respect for Rabbi Eliezer. V'yoshal lefana b'richuk av amas, and he sat 4 amas away from Rabbi Eliezer. Amalei Rabbi Akiva, amalei Rabbi Eliezer, Akiva ma'yoy mi'yamayim. So Rabbi Eliezer asked him, Akiva, what's different today than other days? Why aren't you sitting closer to me, and why are you wearing black? Amalei, Rebbe, kimedumali shechaverim b'delim imcha. Rebbe, it seems to me that that your colleagues have separated themselves from you, which is a nice way of saying it. It's as if he's saying, like, they've put themselves in Nidri, but Rabbi Eliezer got the message that it means. Afu karav gonav, so Rabbi Eliezer also tore his clothes, like a person does when he's in chayim, v'cholat min olav, and took off his shoes, v'nishmat v'yashav agav v'karka, and he slipped off and sat on the ground. He slipped off his chair or whatever and sat on the ground. Zogu ein of demos, and his eyes, he started crying. Yeah, so he started crying. Loka olam, at that point, from the sire that Rabbi Eliezer had, that it did have a bad effect on the world. The world was struck. Shlish b'zeisim, one third of the olive crops was damaged, or shlish b'chitim, one third of the wheat, or shlish b'sa'odim, and one third of the barley. Why one third? Marsha says of it because one half it had to be less than a half, because Rabbi Eliezer himself is not the majority. That's the whole point. He's the minority. But it was the largest possible minority, basically. One third is the largest simple fraction that's less than a half. So therefore, it represented the Eibishter sort of standing up for his covered. That even though he's in the majority, he felt bad because they put him in Nidri, or Chayrim, as the case may be. Come on.
She loves it. She
wants
to talk to you
about it. I'm flying over here to tomorrow. We're learning tomorrow over here. Don't bring in Shlissim, please. And some say even if a woman was holding dough and kneading it, it spoiled in her hand. The dough spoiled while she's kneading it, also as a... So there are mafoshim who say it doesn't mean the whole wheat crop and barley crop, etc. Maybe it means only the ones that belong to these chachamim. Tana, we learn in a brayza. Ach gadol haya ba'osayim. There was a great blow on that day, or on the side it says ach, a great anger on that day. Anything that Rabbi Eliezer looked at on that day was burnt up. We know the chachamim have power with their eyes. But after Rabbi Gamliel, who was Baba Sfina, and also Rabbi Gamliel, who was a Nasi at the time, was Rashi says, "Al Piv Nasa." The whole thing was done under his name. When somebody is put in Nidri or Chayim, as the case may be, it's done where he oversees it. He's the one in charge. So he's the one who would have had to sign off on it.
He shouldn't have been on a boat, I'll tell you that. Rabbi
Ramnil here, Bob Esfina, he was on a ship. Amadol of Nachsha Latovo. No, the decision was made, and then he had to go on a boat, whatever. Amadol of Nachsha Latovo, a storm blew up and was going to drown, and was going to sink the ship. Omar, he said, Kimitumali, Sha'inze, Elab Shura Belezman Hokiness. It seems to me this is only happening because of Belezman Hokiness. Omadar Raglavam, he stood up on his feet and he said, Rabbani Shalom, Goli Viadura Lachanacha Shalom, Chavoydi Asisi, Vloyla Chavoyd Beis Abba Asisi. It's well known and it's revealed and known before you, the Eibishter, that I didn't do this for my covered. I didn't do this for the covered of my father's house. Elo Lachavoydcha, I did it for your covered. Shalayuba, Machloikas be Israel, so that Machloikas shouldn't increase among the Jewish people, as Rashi says, so that the Yachid shouldn't be in the habit of arguing against the Merubim, against the majority. Sure enough, Nohayam Mizapai, and this the sea calmed down from its storminess. Continues the Gemara with the story. Ima Shalom Devesu Rabbi Eliezer. Ima Shalom, that was her name. Mefarshim say Ima was a title of respect, like this is, you would say Rebetzin, you would say nowadays. And Shalom was her actual name. Anyway, Devesu Rabbi Eliezer, she was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer. Ach said Rabbi Gamliel Havoy, she was also the sister of Rabbi Gamliel. Now, who might have Eloch, I have a Shavkle, Rabbi Eliezer, a maple alape. From then on, she would never allow Rabbi Eliezer to do Nefilas Apayim. Because during the Filas Apayim, you dive into the Eibishter to stand up for you. She was afraid that in the course of that, Rabbi Eliezer, not explicitly daven that the Chachamim should be punished or whatever, but still, from him crying over there, from him doing Tachnun over there, it may end up having an effect. Now, how does she keep him from doing Tachnun, the Shredder, does she keep him from doing the Filas Apayim all day? No. So the Ra'ah, one of the famous Rishonim, the Ra'ah brings, you see from this that Nefilas Apayim is only maximally effective if you do it right after Shemana Esrei. If you wait and you do it sometime later in the day, okay, I mean, you said Tachnun, you said Nefilas Apayim, very nice, but it doesn't have the same effect. So all she had to do is make sure that right after Shemana Esrei, he's busy with something else. And then by the time later on, he'll say Tachnun, he'll say Nefilas Apayim. He wasn't in the shul, he was dining at home.
He
was in Nidui, so he's at home. Because they were learning a lot, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, have a time passed. One time, a certain day, was Rosh Chodesh. Ve'ichlof laben molil chasev. She got confused that she thought that she nowadays when we have a Chodesh Mole, when the previous month is 30 days, you have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, and when it's a Chodesh Chaser, then you only have 1 day, like we're going to have this coming week. In those times, it was when they did up year to year, it was a little bit different. When there's a Chodesh of 30 days, the 30th day is not Rosh Chodesh. Only the 31st day, the first day of the new month, is Rosh Chodesh. You only have there's no such thing as a 2 day Rosh Chodesh. So therefore, what happens, Rashi says, is.
Wait. Say that again.
In those times, you didn't have a two-day Rosh Chodesh. It was 1 day. It was either the 30th day or the 31st day, as the case may be. So what happened was, she thought that it was a Chodesh Chaser, therefore Rosh Chodesh is going to be on the 30th day. Instead, it was a Chodesh Molly. The 30th day is not Rosh Chodesh. So now, that day, she didn't take care to make sure he doesn't do Nefilas HaPaim, because he doesn't do Nefilas HaPaim Rosh Chodesh. So Marsha says the other way around. Marsha has a problem with that explanation of Rashi, and he says the other way around. What it was is, it was a Chodesh Chaser. It was a 29-day Rosh Chodesh. She thought the 30th and the 1st are going to be Rosh Chodesh, like we have it nowadays, a 2-day Rosh Chodesh. Instead, there was only 1 day Rosh Chodesh, the 30th, which is the first day of the new month. The next day was already Beis, and then she thought it was still the 2nd day Rosh Chodesh. Anyway, so she didn't take care. So she didn't take care to make sure that he's not saying Tachnun. Ikadamri, or another version, also Anya Bakoya Bava, a poor person came and stood by the door to ask for tzedakah, and she brought out some bread for him. Either way, Ashkachte, she comes back and she finds the Nafal Alanpe that he's doing the Nefilas HaPaim. Omrele, she says to him, Kum, get up, katlis la'ochi, you're killing my brother. Adahochi, Nafak, she put him, and as this was going on, sure enough, they heard a shofar being blown from the house of Rav Gamliel, announcing that he had passed away. So he says to her, how do you know that this is going to have such an effect? She says, I have the Kabbalah from my ancestors, meaning from David. We learned on Amr Aleph, with the Nesiim, she's the sister of Rav Gamliel, so the descendant from David Amalek. We learned on Amr Aleph that David spoke and told him about the seriousness of Einah and how seriously the Abishah treats it. I learned, Mebeis Aviyaba, Kol HaShalim Nin Olim Chutz Mishar Einah. All the gates are locked except for the gates of Einah. So therefore, in other words, she says, I realize you having been the, sort of the victim of Einah, in a certain sense, I know it's Dvarim. I mean, the Chachamim did it for the right reasons. Like Rabbi Gamliel said, I did it with Kavod Shemayim, but still, Rabbi Yezer was hurt by it. And therefore, when he had a chance to do Nefilas HaPaim, it had an effect.
Although he didn't mean to.
If somebody hurts a ger's feelings, a nas dvarim we're talking about, over b'shloisha lavin, he is over on 3 lavin, v'haloichzer over b'shnayim, anybody who oppresses a ger, for example, he owes you money and then you're pressuring him to pay, over b'shnayim is over on 2 lavin. Okay, question is, ma'ishna ma'ane, just give shloisha lavin. So what's the difference between ma'ane, you have 3 lavin, because 3 times, the Torah says, a ger loisona, v'chiyogrit ha-ger ba'atzcham loisona oisoi, and loisona ishas amiso, the third one is not specifically about a ger, but it says, don't wrong amiso, which means a fellow yid who keeps Torah and mitzvah, like we said on Amud Aleph, a ger b'chal amiso, here a ger is in that category. Well, then, loisonami shloisha k'sivi, why by loisona, you're saying you're only over on 2 lavin? There's also 3 that it says, v'ger loisochat, and one that applies generically to Jewish people, Vlaisiya like Kenosha, that you shouldn't act him like a creditor to press him for payment. And again, Ger Bechlal, who on a Ger, is again included in that category. So why only 2 of Vlaisiya? Ella, no, you have to correct it. Echadzeva Shloisha. Either way, Ma'ana Es Ager, or Vlaisiya, either way, you're over on 3 lot. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, why does the Torah warn us in 36 places, or some say in 46 places, about a ger, to not wrong a ger, to not hurt his feelings, etc.? Because his sur is bad. Rashi explains, and elsewhere in Hodias, where the Gemara is also brought, that surai basically means his yetzer hara. Gair has a very powerful Yetzer Hara that's always pulling him, go back to your old life. What do you need this new life as a Yid for with all the difficulties of it? So therefore, if you hurt a Gair's feeling or Lechzer or do any of these things, you're making it worse. You're making it much more likely that he's going to say, forget about it. I'm just returning to my old Gair's life. And therefore, the Torah warns about it in so many places. 36 or 46, why those figures? So so Tosfos says, because, for example, I mean, you have a number of places where the Torah explicitly says, don't wrong a Gair or don't hurt a Gair's feelings or whatever. And then you have places where the Torah says, Kigerim Hayisim, or things like that. Do you count those or not? Depending whether you count those or not, you're going to have a different number.
Are we considered in a way like Gerim?
In a few places, yeah, the Torah says Kigerim Hayisim at the time. That's the next thing we're going to say now. What does it mean? The Torah says, "Don't hurt a Ger's feeling and don't pressure him because you were Gerim in Eretz Yisrael." What does one have to do with the other? Tanya, we learn in a Brayso. Tanya, Rav Nosson Omer, Mum Shabach Al Toma L'Chavrach. When you have a mum in you, don't say it to your chaver. Meaning, you yourselves are Gerim, so therefore you yourselves should consider it beneath your dignity to mention anything about Gerus, anything about being a stranger. This is like the expression that people say, if you have somebody who a member of his family was hanged, such a person from such a family should not say to somebody else, for example, to his servant or whatever, hang up this fish. Because even just to mention the word of hanging should be something that would make him feel embarrassed. So the same way, you yourselves should feel the idea that you were Gerim, the Eretz Yisrael, should be so strong by you that you would not even think of calling somebody else, hey, you're a Gerim.
But what was that,
Okay, so the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that the Nidri remained on him his entire life. They never reconciled. Late at the end of his life, the Gemara has a story in Sanhedrin that Rabbi Akiva and a couple of Acham came to visit him, but still stayed four amos away. At the end, where they have a whole story over there, a whole back and forth between them. At the end, when Rabbi Eliezer passed away, they announced Tutar on Nidri. The Nidri is taken off. Why? Because because the whole purpose of it was saying is Shalayuba Machlokas Bishur. You don't want that other people that people are going to start arguing against the Chamim and not the Torah, the Shtei Torahs. Once he passed away, there's no concern about that anymore. Nobody's going to follow him anymore. And in fact,
they don't want to agree to the decision of our Rabbanim.
Apparently not. He had his shitta, and he had his shitta, whether he learned it from his rebbeim, whether it was by him up the lake of Seich or whatever it is, and he couldn't or wouldn't give it up. But that's
a little harder.
Remember him in Gittin?
Yeah. I mean, a person goes according to Bamis, you know.
Remember in Gittin they said, you're going to fight Ari when he's already gone or something?
Yeah, and Meshivin is Ari Lachim, you say, yeah. There's actually a Gemara in Nida that says that there was a certain halacha in Nida over there where technically the halacha should have been like Rabbi Eliezer. However, during his lifetime, they did not pass in that way. After he passed away, Rabbi Yeshua said, you know what, now we can pass them like him. The Gemara says, why? Because with this whole story over here, Rabbi Eliezer Shamutihu, If they would paskin halacha like him in this one thing, people might follow him in other things as well. And again, you have the nasa torah k'shtei torahs problem. Once he passed away, there's no concern of that anymore. Now we can clarify the halachas like him in this thing, but not in other things.
And they wouldn't follow him.
And they wouldn't follow him in other things.
Yeah.
And one more thing.
Is there any example in history?
You also have the example of Akavya ben Mahalalel. The mission in Adius, where he actually lived in the time when the Sanhedrin was still functioning. He argued with them on four halachas, but he also never gave in. Although before he passed away, he told his son, "You should give in to them because you only heard it from me. I heard it from my rebbe, but you only heard it from me, and I'm a yochid against the rabbi." So the Gemara actually discusses in Sanhedrin why they didn't judge, why indeed Akavya ben Mahalalel wasn't judged. Well, he did put him in Nidri, but why they didn't judge him as a Zakan Mamre, the Gemara discusses over there. But yeah, these are serious business we're talking about over here.
It was a big thumb
problem. Yeah, Akavya ben Mahalalel, yeah. One more thing I should mention in this connection really is, you know, we kind of take it, it's a natural thing, it's a natural fact of life that there is machlokas, you know, two Jews, three opinions and all that. You have to realize that for over 1,000 years after Mount Torah, there was no such thing. You have a machlokas, you go to the Beis Din HaGadol, they decide, and that's that. it only started in this, during the period of the second Mishmikdash, you started to have machlokas in that couldn't be reconciled. First, you had the machlokas over smicha that went from generation to generation among the zugos, but even there was only that one machlokas, eventually Hillel and Shammai, between them had only three machlokas in, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had something like 300. But Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is not long before this whole story. The whole concept of a permanent, ongoing machlokas is a new thing. So very much so, the Chachamim were concerned to try and prevent it from proliferating as much as possible.
There were machlokas even from the time of Korach.
Korach was swallowed up in the ground. That was a machlokas for the Shem Shemayim. We're talking about a machlokas in Torah. We're talking about a machlokas between Talmid Chachamim, who are arguing the Shem Shemayim, but up until the original idea was that you go, as the Pasuk tells us in Parshas Shoftim, you go to the Beis Sinagogal, they vote on it, they decide, and that's that. Once they decide, it's binding on everybody else. You have to accept it. So it only started in the time of the second Mishmikdash, with the tzaris that began going on over there. It started to happen. Please close the door. It started to happen that there were machlokas and that they couldn't resolve. But it was a fairly new development in Jewish life at this time. So the fact that Rabbi Eliezer was arguing and not giving up his opinion in favor of the Rabbim was serious business. Oh. Mishnah says, "In ma'avin peiros peiros." You're not allowed to mix. You're not allowed to mix produce with produce. Rashi says we're talking about if you have a balabasa saying, "I'm going to sell you I'm going to sell you peiros from this and this field." You're not allowed to mix in peiros from another field and say it. Most other Rishonim say not necessarily. Are we talking about that? That might not be such a problem, but rather we're talking about, for example, mixing poor quality fruit in with the good quality. Afilu chadashim v'chadashim, even if both of them are new, ve'in tzarech lehem chadashim v'yashanim, needless to say, if you agreed that you're going to be selling him old grain, you can't mix in new grain, because Rashi says old grain is drier, for example. You'll get more flour out of it. Ve'emes amru, in truth, the Chachamim said, which we'll see in the Gemara, means that it's an established halacha, ve'yayin itiru l'ar of kosher berach, when it comes to wine, the Chachamim allowed you to mix harsh wine with gentle wine. Pashtus kosher means like thicker or more alcoholic or whatever with lighter wine. Because it improves it. So therefore, Rashi says, for example, you made up with somebody that I'm going to sell you wine which is rach. You're allowed to mix in some wine which is kosher. Because it improves it. Continues the Mishnah. You're not allowed to mix the dregs of wine into wine. But you can give the person who's buying wine, you can give him the dregs. What that means exactly, we'll talk about in the Gemara, what you're allowed to and not allowed to give him.
Are we talking about for sale?
We're talking about, yeah.
For sale, not in general, obviously.
We're talking about for sale, yeah. Mishnas out of Mayim B'ya. You know, somebody who water was mixed into his wine, Loyim Kerenu B'chanos, he's not allowed to sell it in a store, to sell it retail. Unless he informs each person who's buying that there's water mixed in, the loyla tagger, and he's not allowed to sell the whole barrel together to a merchant after the idea, even if he informs him, because the merchant, why is he buying that when there's water mixed into it? He's planned, we have to assume, he plans to cheat other people with it. He'll sell it retail and not inform them there's water in it. However, in a place where it is customary to mix wine into wine, yatilu, then you're allowed to mix it. It is a Mishnah. Hatagar noto mehegi. Because it's a known thing. It's a standard practice there. Yeah. Hatagar noto mehegi gronos venos and lasech megura achas. A wholesaler, a merchant, is allowed to take from five different granaries, he bought from five different people, let's say, and put it all into one bin, and sell it that way, or mix, because everybody knows he's a merchant. He's a wholesaler. The first case in the Mishnah was talking about, for example, a balabas selling his own produce, so you can't mix willy-nilly from one field into another. But a merchant, a tagger, everybody knows he buys from many different vendors and then mixes it all together. Similarly, mehei gittis, he can buy from five different wine pits. And put it all into one big barrel. As long as he doesn't mean to mix it. Now, what do we mean by that? Rashi says it shouldn't be that, for example, he buys most of it from some place that has good quality, and then he's going to mix in other stuff that's lesser quality. People are going to think it's all the high quality stuff. He has to make it clear that this is all it's all a mix. You may get good stuff, you may not get good stuff. It's the luck of the draw, basically.
How come the Mishnah doesn't say that in that case?
Well, it's not necessarily a case of lowering the price. You have to charge a fair price, obviously. Otherwise, it's a no. We know that. But here we're talking not so much from the point of view of a no, the technicalities of a no, but rather from the point of view of doing honest business. Turn it up on him. Ain't so chloim chadoshes me'ab of yeshonis mishalish. Needless to say that, for example, if new grain is selling at the rate of 4 saw to the seller, the yeshonis mishalish, and old stuff is more expensive, you can only buy 3 saw of it for a seller, the ain ma'ariv, and then for sure you're not allowed to mix in new stuff because then you're selling it all at the higher price, at the price of the old stuff, so therefore you have a you're selling it to him. Because it's drier, and therefore you can get more flour out of it. As a matter of fact, Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Bava Basra that says that everything is better old than new, except for the Gemara says over there, except for date, beer, and harisano, which is a kind of fish, kind of like a silver fish sort of stuff. Well, it depends on what kind of fruit, right? I mean, certain kinds of fruit are better dried apple, than fresh, I guess. Not apple, yeah. So needless to say, if the new stuff is worth less, then you're not allowed to mix it. Even if the other way around, even if the new stuff is selling at the higher price, and the old stuff, which is better quality, is selling at the lower price, in my oven, you're still not allowed to mix new into the old, because you have to assume that a person may want to hold on to the grain for a while in order to age it. So therefore, if a person said that I want to buy old grain, then he obviously doesn't. He wants to grind it right away. He doesn't plan to store it for a long time. Therefore, you can't mix a new grain with it, because the new grain, then it's going to ruin it. When he goes to mill it, it's not going to produce as much flour as he expects. That's halacha. On the side over here, brings up the reef has the gears to the other way around. That needless to say, if the new stuff is selling at the lower price and the old stuff is selling at the higher price. Or the other way around. If the newer stuff is selling at the higher price and the old is at the lower price, that you're not allowed to. He explains basically when the Mishnah said after the chadashim the chadashim, that you're not even allowed to mix new with new. It's referring to that. That even if the new is higher quality, you're still not allowed to mix it in. And they showed him right to the Yashin because he may want to hold on to it. No, but in other words, you're not allowed to mix in old stuff into the new.
Even the newest,
that's what we're saying, yeah. The emes amru b'yayin tzir la'ar kosher b'rach. We said in the Mishnah that the emes amru, in truth, they said that you're allowed to mix stronger wine into weaker wine, because it makes it better. Amr abalazer, ada amra, from this you see, called the emes amru halachati. Whenever you have in a Mishnah, whenever it says on something, the emes amru, it means it's an established halacha. Meaning, Rashi says it's based on the fact that... What's the matter? Rashi says like this. The fact that the Mishnah is telling us a logical reason, the fact that the Mishnah starts out the emes amru, is my mistake. Given that the Mishnah is telling us something that begins with Be'emes Omru and then continues with a logical reason, why are you allowed to mix all the strong wine into weak wine? Because it improves it. Therefore, Rashi says, you see from that, whenever, in all other cases, in the Mishnah, when it says Be'emes Omru, it means similar to that it's an established halacha. There's a good logical reason for it, and therefore it's a halacha and nobody disagrees with it. The Rambam says differently. The Rambam says this is an example of halacha l'moshe mitzinai. The emes amru halacha, he means that this is a halacha l'moshe mitzinai, so you're allowed to do that. Different reforshim talk about doesn't necessarily mean literally halacha l'moshe mitzinai, or does it just mean, similar to what Rashi says, a halacha that's so strongly established, it's as if it was a halacha l'moshe mitzinai, even though the actual din itself may only be the Rambam. This that we're talking about, that you're allowed to mix in strong wine with weaker wine, is only during the time while they're still pressing and making the wine. Because, Rashi says, at that time the wine is still fermenting, it's still bubbling, so therefore the wines mix well together, and you end up with a nice blended wine, sort of like when they do blended whiskeys, kind of. But after the vintage season, after wine has already been pressed out and it's finished fermenting, then at that point you can't mix it, because they're not going to mix well. You're going to have two different things mixed together that aren't going to. The Gemara says, "Well, idna to come avish lo benakidus." What about though? Nowadays, we see that people mix wines even not during the vintage season. How does that work? Amar Papa the Yadi will come after. So the Papa says, "Okay, because people know that that's what everybody does. Everybody knows there's a chazaka already that people do that, and therefore they're meichel." Rav Acha bred the Rebbeiko. Mahomani Rav Acha. Here, Rav Acha bred the Rebbeiko says, "I can answer a different way. Who does that follow? This that they're allowed to do this. Benagit Acha gitus." Is pointed to Rav Acha. The Tanya, Rav Acha mati b'davar anita. We say in a braisa that Rav Acha allows it with something that a person can easily taste. Namely, like this, when you buy wine, you usually taste a little bit of it. That's how it was in those days, anyway. Therefore, if you mix in kosher in rach outside the vintage season, it'll be noticeable. A person will know, hey, and therefore, if they want to buy at that point, then that's the, you know, they can buy it. You're not cheating them like that. The Mishnah continues. We say you can't mix in the dregs of wine into the wine, but you can give him his dregs. So what do you mean you can give him his dregs? The Mishnah started off by saying you can't mix the dregs in. So what are you giving him the dregs? Maybe it means that means that you inform him that there's dregs in it. But the Mishnah continues by distinguishing whether you inform them or not. That if there was water mixed in, you're not allowed to sell at retail unless you inform the buyers. Below the tiger fish of idea, you're not allowed to sell to a wholesaler even if you inform him. So the Resha evidently is talking about even if you didn't inform him. So you're allowed to give him the shmarim. So what is that? That means like this. You're not allowed to take the dregs of yesterday's wine, the wine that you poured out yesterday, and the dregs were left over in the barrel. You're not allowed to mix them into today's wine. Similarly, you're not allowed to take the dregs from today's wine and mix it into yesterday's wine, because it actually says the dregs of one batch of wine would ruin under a different batch. But you're allowed to keep the wine itself that has the dregs. You're allowed to keep the dregs in it when you sell it to the other guy. That if somebody pours out wine for somebody else, it actually points out, by the way, shofar is meloshin pouring out gently. You pour out wine gently so you try as much as possible. The dregs should stay in the barrel. If you pour it too hard, they'll all just come splashing out. You're not allowed to mix in the dregs from yesterday's wine with today's, or the dregs of today's wine with yesterday's. And Rashi says it doesn't necessarily mean today's and yesterday's. It means from one barrel to another. But you're allowed to mix in dregs from yesterday with yesterday's, and of today with today's, meaning, in other words, you're allowed to keep the dregs in the same barrel and sell them the barrel with the dregs. Well, not from one day to another. We're saying within the same barrel. The dregs are like the pulp and whatever that's left over on the bottom. Yeah. Mishnah is out of mind. You know, the Gemara said the Mishnah has continued that if somebody had water mixed into his wine, and he's not allowed to sell it in a store, retail, unless he imports him. The Gemara tells us, Rava Iser like Chamer Mich. So one time they brought Rava some wine from a Mazdeh, he mixed it with water, like they usually do in these days. Tameh, he tasted it. Well, I have a bottle, but it didn't taste good. Shadri l'chanusah, so he returned it to the store. Amalei Abayeva, Anantanan was a tagraf fishadir. What about this that we're saying you're not allowed to sell wine with water mixed into it to a wholesaler, even if you inform him, because he's going to use it to cheat other people. Amalei, Rava answers him, Mizgavidi mega yidia. My kind of mixing is well known. I put in a lot more water than most people do. We find there's various Gemaras where we see the normal amount was most people would mix one part wine with two parts. Rava used to do one part of wine to three parts. So his was much more dilute, so you could tell whether it was very noticeable. So therefore, it was similar to what we said before about Rav Acha says, Mati B'Dava HaNitam, something that you can obviously taste difference, we're not worried that he's going to cheat. He brought the wine undiluted. Then he diluted it with three parts water, as he usually did in order to drink it. And then he returned it. That's the thing we're saying. Because he didn't taste it. Didn't taste good. He didn't like the taste. So like
they had a good return.
Yeah. But he added water. That's all. He added water, but because he wanted to take, he wanted to try it, and then he found it was no good. Yeah. Okay. That's the point. But that's the same. Because his amount of water that he adds is very noticeable. We're not worried that the merchant is going to be able to use it to cheat other people with. Because anybody who tastes that wine is immediately going to realize it's three quarters water. The Chitema, Rava continues, so you might argue the tougher your Mechayle. So you might argue, okay, what the merchant will do is he'll add a little full wine in there to bring it back up to the usual dilution ratio, and then he'll mazabinle, and then he'll sell it clean as completely wine. Okay, in pain, and the Dava Saif, if you're going to go like that, there's no end to the matter. You couldn't sell pure wine either because the merchant might mix in a little bit of water and then sell it. You can't sell him water because he might use it to mix into the wine. You're not allowed to sell him something that which... You can't sell him something which, as it is, he could use to cheat other people with. You're not worried what he might do with it. The Mishnah said, Mokam Shinago Lahata Mayim Yayna. If you look at Chulad, in a place where it's customary to put water into wine than you're allowed to, Tana, we learn in a Brisa, a Mech, a Shlish, a Leravia. This means you can add whatever the Minhag HaMedina is, a half, third, a quarter. Omer Rabba Beina Gittis Shonu. And again, Rab says that this is only talking about during the vintage season, because again, then the water will mix well with the wine while the wine is fermenting, and therefore it'll come out tasty. September, October time, I guess, You know what? All right. Mishnah. Thank you. A storekeeper should not give out toasted grain or nuts to children, because then he's accustoming them to come to his store, and then it's gonna hurt all the other storekeepers. He shouldn't give the kids treats. Cloyus Bergozim are typical treats they give kids in those days. Cloyus toasted grain, has sweet taste it, and it goes him as nuts. Next, the Mishnah says a storekeeper should not undercut the price for the same reason, because then he's going to hurt everybody else's livelihood. They're all going to come buy from him. He should be remembered for good, because it'll lower the prices it'll make it cheaper for everybody. Abishol says that a storekeeper is not allowed to pick the psoilus out of split beans. He's selling split beans. He shouldn't. You have the usual psoilus. You have bits of the shells and the pods and whatever in them. He shouldn't pick all that out. Because then what's going to happen is it's going to look so much better that he's going to charge much more than the value that there is an increase in value by taking out the psoilus, sure, but like this, because it looks so much better without any psoilus, he's going to be able to jack up the price much more than you should be expected to just for taking it out. For reasons which we'll say in the Gemara. The Chachamim do agree that he can't just pick out the psoilus from the top of the bin, so the top of it looks clean, and then underneath they have all the psoilus. Shane, Alex, you're going to the iron, because that's just cheating them. Which Tosfos Yomtov says, the chiddush in that is, even if he informs them that only the top is cleaned out and the bottom is not, nevertheless, he may inform them, but still, their eye is going to see it looks so much better, and therefore, they're not going to pay attention to what he says. You know, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes, you know, so they're going to end up, yeah. No, but that's the point. Even if he's not doing it specifically to cheat them, even if he informs them, you should know, if you dig in, you're going to find all the psoilus, but nevertheless, when they look and see, hey, the top of it looks clean, they're going to think, You are not allowed to beautify people, meaning an Eved Kanani, for example, who's going to be sold. Like they're putting makeup on him. Or an example we'll see in the Gemara, dye in their hair. Yeah, you're not allowed to. Wait. Yeshua, it doesn't matter. Rashi says Eved Kanani. v'loyasa behema v'loyasa kelim, or an animal or kelim. We'll see in the Gemara what you're allowed and not allowed to do. We said the first machlokes in the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda said that a storekeeper should not give out treats to the kids to make sure that they'll always come to his store. And the Chachamim say it's allowed. Why? Domalei, because the other storekeeper, the first storekeeper, can say to the second one, okay, anomach lignam guzi, fine, I'm giving out nuts. That's holy shisi, you start giving out plums. You can also give out treats and the kids will come to you. I'm not hurting you in that regard. We say they shouldn't lower his prices, but the Chachamim says Zocholatoy. My time is Rabbanon. And what's the Chachamim's reason? Rashi says the question isn't why he can lower the prices. Of course he can lower the prices. Why are we saying on him Zocholatoy? It's a wrong expression. What's the great good that he's doing for the?
Can he lower the price to cost?
Well,
then. In
well, but then he's not going to make a profit.
Wait, let's.
Mishum to kamarva katara, the reason is because he makes the prices easier. Because what's gonna happen, once you have people who store away grain, who hoard grain or produce or whatever for shortages, when they see that prices are going down, they're gonna realize that there's no sense in us holding on to it. We may as well let go of our stuff, and now prices will go down across the market and everybody will be able to buy more cheaply. So that's the thing. Rashi says the point of the Gemara's question is he allowed to lower his prices? Of course, everybody agrees he's allowed to. Or not everybody agrees. Okay, we had a machlokas in the Mishnah, but fine. It's given the Chachamim say he can. But why are we saying Zocha Latoy? The reason is because he's having a benefit on the whole market itself. There are other Mephoroshim who say that actually the Gemara's question may have been, why should he be allowed to lower his prices and hurt everybody else's livelihood? And the reason is because, on the other hand, he's benefiting all the consumers. Because now they'll end up being able to buy at lower prices.
Well, that's the question. Can you hurt some in order to benefit others?
But the storekeepers themselves will end up benefiting. They also have to buy grain sometimes. So like this, when prices are lower across the board, the only ones who are losing out are these Oitzri Pedis, the ones who are hoarding grain against shortages, and we don't like them anyway. We anyway want them to put their stock on the market so the prices stay low. We don't want them to inflate the prices by holding on to it.
Or maybe they should hold on to it.
A certain amount, fine, but not to hoard so much that the price that's going to raise the price.
Oh, you mean they're hoarding it?
They're hoarding it
their own
for their own. Yeah.
Apparently, yeah. They don't understand. From what is mentioned here, there's
like
no
price fixing and ADA.
There's no mention of the law of supply and demand. They would benefit tremendously to lower prices. Because they volumes would.
That's the thing. Once they lower the prices, demand is going to go up. Therefore, the supply is going to have to be increased.
Yeah, but here we're mentioning that the prices are going to benefit consumers.
That's what we mean. Yeah, that's what we mean. In other words, that the supply will increase because the Oitzri Pedis will be willing to dump their stuff rather than holding on to it. Yeah.
Okay.
And then they'll sell it at a cheaper price. Yeah.
Okay.
The Mishnah had said, "V'lo yovaras agrisin divra abashol." The abashol had said, "You're not allowed to pick out the psoilus from beans." V'cham matir and chulah v'cham teitz mutter. Man chachamim rabacha. Who is the chachamim in our Mishnah? Means rabacha. Tanya rabacha matir b'dover anira. Just like we said on Amud Aleph that rabacha allows with something that you can easily taste. So also he says it's mutter with something that you can easily see. The consumers themselves can easily see that the psoilus has been picked out and evaluate for themselves how much more am I willing to pay for that service having been done. Then the Mishnah said, you're not allowed to beautify people or animals or kelim. Turn it up on them. So the Braisa gives some examples of this. In Mesharvatin as a behemah, you are not allowed to Mesharvatin, means a stick. You're not allowed to do a stick to an animal. What a stick means, we'll talk about in a couple of lines in the Gemara. In Noshkin Bakravayim, you're not allowed to blow up kishkis. When you're selling kishkis, you're not allowed to blow them up to make them look bigger. The insurance of Bosabamayim and you're not allowed to soak meat in water. My Ein Meshavitin, so the first one, what does it mean, Ein Meshavitin? Hocha Tagimu Maya de Chizra. Here in Bavel, they explained it means that you give the animal to drink water that had bran soaked in it. That causes the animal's stomach to swell and it causes its hair to stand on end, therefore the animal looks larger. So Meshavitin, Meloshim, like the hair stands up like little sticks on it. They're not allowed to do that because it makes it look bigger. Ze'iri, Omer Rav Kahana, Maskafta. Ze'iri said in the name of Rav Kahana that it has a different meaning. It means to comb the animal's hair. Again, you comb it to make it stand up, again, like sticks, and therefore it makes it look bigger, even though it's really not. Now, the Gemara tells a few examples where we are allowed to do these things. Shmuel shara lemumit trumi l'sarbala. Shmuel allowed people who were selling a cloak to put fringes around it, to put nice silk fringes around the edges of it. Rabbi Yehuda shara l'kaskusi kami. Rabbi Yehuda allowed people who were selling embroidered colored garments. He allowed them to wash them with water that had bran mixed in it, like to starch them to make them look nicer. Rabba allowed people who were selling clothes made out of canvas, which is hemp. He allowed them to beat them with wooden hammers to make them look thinner, which is higher quality. Rava allowed people who were selling arrows to paint them. Rapapa Bashmul Sharla Salomi Dikuli, and Rapapa Bashmul allowed people who were selling baskets to paint them also. The question is why? How are they allowed to do that? Vanam Tanan, Ain Mafakus, and Lawyer Sodom, Lawyer Sabahim, and Lawyer Sakaman. The answer is like Kasha Habachatsi Habatiki. Depends whether the things are new or old. If the thing is new, you're allowed to paint it or decorate it or put fringes on it, whatever you want, because the person sees that it's new. He sees, okay, you're trying to make it. You're making it look nicer. You want to pay more for the fact that it looks nicer. Gesundheit. As opposed to if it's old and you're painting it or putting fringes on it or whatever, you're trying to hide something. That not. Pirkus the Adam Maihi. What's an example of beautifying a person? And by the way, Rabbi Yaakov Emden. You were asking about women. Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a short, interesting discussion about it. He talks about how does this relate as far as shidduchim, let's say, for example, to a woman putting on makeup before a date. He says that basically it depends. Are you trying to hide something, or are you just trying to bring out your natural look better? Yeah, for women, it's normal. But if it's to conceal blemishes, for example, where then afterwards, you know, the guy is going to find out after they're engaged or whatever, that would be an example. Tirkus da Adamaihi, what is an example of beautifying a person? Kihodahu Avdasava, for example, there was the case of this old Eved. The Ozot Sabi Ladesho Ladikne, he was old, so his hair and beard were white. He dyed them black, so he'd look young again. Now, who was he, by the way? Rashi says he must have been a goy, because at the time when this story happens, by the Amoroyim, there was no such thing as an Eved Ivri anymore. An Eved Ivri only exists. There's Manshah Yovel Noyeg, and then the Yovel stopped being Noyeg already towards the end of the first Beis Mikdash. So hundreds of years before the Amoroyim. On the other hand, there are Rishonim that Rashba talks about. It may have actually been a Yid who he doesn't want to sell himself as an Eved, as we're going to see, but rather he wants to hire himself out long term. Anyway. Also, Kamei de Rava. Please close the door after yourself. So he came to Rava. Omale Zibnon. He says to Rava, buy me as an Eved. Omale, so Rava tells him, I don't want to. As we say in Pirkei Avos, Yiyaniyim b'nei beischa, let poor people be the members of your household. Meaning, if I need people to serve around my house, instead of buying an Eved Kanani, better, let me give a poor Yid a job, give a poor Yid parnasa. According to the other explanation, that this guy was a Yid, then Rava meant, you're not quite as poor as some of the other people that I employed. No, he didn't know yet, he looked young, but still, okay, I have already other people, I have other poor Yidin working for me, I don't need another. Also, came to Rapapa Bashmul Zabne. Then he went to Rapapa Bashmul, and Rapapa Bashmul bought him as an Eved. Yoy Machad Amalei Ashkian Maya. One day, Rapapa Bashmul says to him, "Give me a drink of water." Also, Chavri L'Reishu L'Dikne. So the Eved didn't want to. Drawing water in those days was a hard job. So he washed out the dye and made his hair and beard look white again, their natural color. Amalei, and then he comes back and says, "Chazi Dana Koshish Mavruch. Look at me. I'm older than your father. Show a little derech eretz for me. Don't make me work hard as an Eved." Kori Anachse. So the Papa Bashmul said in himself, "I can apply to myself the pasuk Tzadik Mitzora Nechlat Vayovei Acher Tachta." A tzaddik is saved from a tzara. The tzaddik being Rava, that he was a tzaddik, he followed what it said in Pirkei Avos, and therefore he was spared from this guy. Vayavar Acher Tachtav, and somebody else comes instead of him. The pasuk actually says Vayavar Rasha Tachtav. Rav Papa Bashmul didn't want to call himself a Rasha, but Acher, I'm like another person. I didn't pay attention to that verse in Pirkei Avos, and therefore now I wind up with this guy where I paid good money for him, and I can't wait.
Fail.
Okay, but the fact of the matter is, right now he has this guy. What's he going to do? He bought him from himself. Zibnon, buy me. The guy was selling himself. So now already, okay, the money's gone. What are you going to do? Yeah. So therefore, I'm stuck basically. Yeah, or I'm stuck with an Eved that I can't do anything with. But if I'd done like Rava, then yeah. What?
He was rich though, no?
Who? Rav Shmuel? Yeah, but still.
He's a fool.
Yeah. Hadron al-Hadron.
Rava exactly did what he said he had enough.
You know what I mean? If I need people to serve me around my house, I'd rather have four Jews than another man. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos, yeah.
What's the Russian exactly?
Giyonim b'nei Beischa, that's what it says. One of the meanings, there's Mephoshim say a number of meanings of it, but one of them means if you need people to serve around your house, better give a yid parnosa by having him work for you rather than hiring a guy. Let's see if we can get a little bit into the new Perek that we have ground yet to cover, so we'll... This perek is going to talk about the dinim of ribis. So ribis d'oraisa is what's called ribis k'tzutza, where you make up in advance, I'm borrowing X amount from you, I'm going to pay you back X plus Y, percent or amount or whatever, that's ribis d'oraisa. Pretty much everything else that we're going to talk about in this perek, is going to, including starting with our Mishnah, is going to be ribis d'rabbana. The basic concept behind ribis is, called the Gemara we're going to see in throughout the perek, it's called agar neter. Is you're giving the person extra because he's waiting for his payment. So classic ribis k'tzutza is exactly like that. You lent me $100 because you're waiting to get that $100 back. You don't have the use of it for that for time being. Therefore, I'm going to pay you extra. I'm going to give you an extra $10 or whatever. Ribis d'rabbanan are similar kinds of concepts. Is, for example, as we'll talk about, where I'm selling something to you. I'm arranging a sale with you in advance, but I'm not yet giving you the goods. And because you paid me in advance, therefore I'm going to give you more goods than you otherwise would have had if you would have taken delivery now. That's what we're going to see throughout the parak, that those are that's one type of ribis d'rabbanan, and then we'll see there are others. I'll tell you
if there was already. All the ribis was there, right? So it was plain and everything.
Because that's the Chachamim were concerned, as usual, with a gzera of the Chachamim. If you're allowed to do something like that, for example, with contracts and things like that, you may come to ribis d'oraisa. You may not realize that there's a difference between arranging in advance that I'm going to buy X amount of wheat from you at this price, and later on you're going to give me more wheat, versus I'm going to lend you X amount of wheat now, and you're going to pay me back X plus Y later. A heter iska is what you do is send. Well, we'll see various aspects of heter iska throughout the perek over the next couple of weeks. But a heter iska basically boils down to you convert the loan into a partnership. You make it later on in the Masechta, the Gemara will tell us, considered half of the money is a loan and half of it is a pikadon. So you have the one person has lent out the money. He's like the venture capitalist. The other one is the managing partner. He's the one who's actually running the business. You're entitled to, when you invest in something, you're entitled to a profit on it. That's basically how a heter iska works. Instead of doing it as a loan, you're doing it as I'm investing in your business, and therefore I'm entitled to a profit. But we'll see. As we go through the perek, there's various details that are needed in order to make that work, up the halacha, in order not to have problems with ribis. Since you mention it, by the way, I will say there's a couple of places, including there's a sicha in Chel Gimel and a few other places where the Rebbe talks about what's the deeper idea behind why ribis is osur and why it's such a serious issur, as we'll see as we go throughout the perek, and why, on the other hand, the heter iska is mutter. The idea is that Rebbe says like this, but nimis in yoni. Ribis amounts to saying, this money used to belong to me. It doesn't belong to me now, fine, I lent it to you. However, because it used to belong to me, therefore I'm entitled to charge extra for you using it. In terms of our relationship with the Eibishter, that would be that the Eibishter has given me koyach, the Eibishter has given me koyches to do what I'm supposed to be accomplishing in the world. And then, so to speak, the Eibishter would say, now I'm washing my hands of you. Now you're all on your own. And that's osur, that's ribis.
Say that again.
Ribis amounts to saying, I previously had this money, now I put it in your hands, I've washed my hands of you, I have nothing to do with it right now, however, you are going to owe me for it later on. In terms of our relationship with Hashem, that would be the Eibishter saying, I gave you kochus, and now, that's it, I've washed my hands of you, and now you're all on your own. And that's a pretty serious thing.
Pretty similar to what we learned before, that everything is closed besides his.
Yeah.
Eibishter, you're $10, seems like
basically close.
But we're saying that's not like that. The Ebishter still wants to be involved with our avodah. So therefore, Heter Iska amounts to that you're saying, it's true I lent you the money, but I'm still involved. I'm a partner in the business. And that's the equivalent of the Ebishter saying, I gave you Kirchus, I'm still very much involved in what you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
And where is
that from? The Rebbe, it's a Sikha in Chelek Gimel. It's a Sikha in Chelek Gimel for Baha'i Bukhari. Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be a 50-50 partnership.
We'll see as we go through the pattern. So the Mishnah starts off. Ezeu neshach ve'ezeu tairus. What is it? Now, the Torah mentions, please close the door after you. The Torah talks about ribis in three places. In Parshas Mishpatim, in Parshas Behar, and in Parshas Kisetze. And in each of those places, or at least in some of those places, the Torah uses the word neshach and the word tairus. Neshach literally means biting, because Rashi says on the pasuk it's like a snake bite or something. At first you don't realize, and all of a sudden it blows up into this big thing. So it is also with interest. You start, all of us know how it is with credit cards, for example. You know, it starts off at 0%, and then before you know it, you owe. Yeah. That's neshach. Tarbis is looking at it from the point of view of the person who's receiving it. He's getting an increase in his money. He lent out 100, he's getting back 110 or whatever. So, ezeu neshach ve'ezeu tarbis, what is the definition of neshach and what is the definition of tarbis? Like this, ezeu neshach is a malva sela behedunin, is a person lends a sela, which is 4 dinarim, with the understanding that he's going to get 5 dinarim back. Or sasayim chitim b'shalosh, or he lends out 2 sov wheat with the understanding that he'll get back 3. Also, mepnesho noshach, that's not allowed, because that is noshach, that's he's biting the other guy, he's taking away from him. The ezeu tarbis, hamarbe b'peiris. What is tarbis? Is when you're increasing what you're getting in peiris. Meaning like this. Ketzad. Loka cheminu chitin b'dinar zahav akur. Suppose that Reuven comes and buys wheat from Shimon at the rate of one gold dinar, which is 25 silver dinar, as we learned in the previous parak, per kur. So he buys a kur of wheat for 25 silver dinar. V'chein ashar, and fine, that's the prevailing price at that time. So he gives him 25 silver dinar, 1 gold dinar right now. He's not going to take delivery of the wheat right now, but now I've bought this amount of wheat from you. Later on in the season, I will come pick it up. Which, fine, that's allowed. Amdu chitin b'lamad dinar. Now, the reason why he did that is he wanted to lock in the price. He wanted to make sure if prices go up, he still wants to be able to get it at that price. Fine. Amdu chitin b'lamad dinar. Later on, the price of wheat goes up, and now it's 30. Now it's 30 dinarim for a kur, instead of 25. Which at that point he would still be entitled to get his wheat. He would still be entitled to get his full kur of wheat, even though it's worth more. That's not ribis because at the time it was yotza hashar. There was a prevailing price, which, as you will see throughout the parak, that's allowed.
Yes, he locked in the price.
Yeah. But only if it was a fixed price at the time, not that it was still fluctuating. That's what we're going to see. That if the price is fluctuating, you're not allowed to do that.
Even if you stipulate a certain price,
if the price is still in flux, you're not allowed to do that.
Price ranging from 25 to 35, we agree on. You're not allowed. Why it's not allowed?
Because if there's no fixed price at the time, then there's a real concern that right now we're making up. You're going to sell me at a 25 silver dinar to the kur, and later on it's going to be worth 30 dinar to the kur. Effectively, that's a form of ribis. If the price is at the time are fluctuating, then there's a real possibility of that it's going to be worth.
Is it within a range?
No, or is fluctuating as no fluctuating as in some people are selling for 25, some are selling for 24, some are selling for 27 or whatever. That's fluctuating. Yotza Hashan means that there was a prevailing price. Everybody is selling right now for 25 dinar per course.
Everybody sells at a slightly different price.
We saw in the previous parak that commodities usually have a certain price, which therefore you can talk about Aina, right? Therefore it's relevant to talk about Aina, more or less than 1/6 or whatever.
We saw that it was within a tiny range. You cannot say
We said that if you overcharge by less than a shtus, then there is mechila. Fine, but it's true there is mechila. But nevertheless, that is based on the idea there is a general price that most people are charging for their thing. You particularly ended up charging a few percent more. We're saying there was mechila on that, but ordinarily there's a fixed price. Most people are selling wheat at 25 dinar per kur right now. So fine, that's allowed.
Yetish has nothing to do with the payers are actually available in their take?
That's a different thing. That's called yeshloi. That's called if the seller himself has chitin at the time. That's a different. There's two different things. There's yotz hashar and there's yeshloi. We will be dealing with that throughout the pattern. Okay. Omaloi. So now the person who bought the wheat says, "Ten lichitai, give me my wheat. Shani wrote to lemochron lechafan yain. I want to buy. I want to take that wheat. I want to take that kur of wheat and use it to buy. And now it's worth 30 dinar. I want to use it to buy wine." Omaloi. So the one who originally sold him the wheat says, "You know what? Instead of that, look, you taka don't need wheat anyway. You only need it in order to trade for wine. Harechitecha asuyas alai b'shloshim. Fine. I will revalue the wheat that I owe you at 30 dinarim." And now, I'm willing to sell you wine at that price, 30 dinar per barrel or whatever. However, the seller does not right now have any wine available. If he had wine, it would be mutter. Yeah, it would be. It's called yeshloi. But because he doesn't have any wine, therefore that's what creates the problem. Because in other words, we're talking about there's no yotz hashar. We'll see. It actually says we're talking about over here. Even if yotz hashar, you're not allowed to, as long as aimloy, as long as he doesn't actually have wine. Why we'll discuss in the Gemara. That's a further complication, which we'll get to in the next couple of blocks. So Gemara says, "Midashavik l'ribis derai." So now the Mishnah is setting aside ribis derai to become a farish derabanan. The Mishnah is focusing on ribis derabanan, this whole case of selling produce at a higher price. Miklal derai of neshach v'tavis chodem milsi. Evidently, now, so what do we have in the Mishnah? In other words, we have ezo neshach and ezo tarbis. Both terms, neshach and tarbis, are used in the Torah. But neshach, we brought an example min haTorah, a case of lending. Tarbis, we didn't use an example that minatoda. We used an example which is only also midrabana.
From our Mishnah.
Miklal midaraisa neshach tarbis chodemilti. That goes to show, evidently, midaraisa. The word neshach and tarbis are one thing. In other words, midaraisa. It seems there's no difference between neshach and tarbis. It's only you also to lend money and get more back. There's no such thing as a separate thing of neshach and tarbis deraisa. It's only midrabana with such a thing as tarbis.
Neshach exactly means.
We said means biting. Tyrus means increasing.
Right,
we said in the Mishnah, Neshech is you're not allowed to lend money and expect a higher amount back. And Tyrus is you're not allowed to do this whole finagling over here with selling produce at a higher price than what it's good than selling produce and locking in a price when the price is going to fluctuate.
That's a lot.
So the question is, well, kroy ksivi neshach kesef ribis oichol. You have a pasuk that says, for example, the pasuk says in Parshas Bahar, es kas b'chol etzitin le b'neshach. You should not give your money to lend your money to somebody at neshach, or your food over marbis le etzitin ochlecha, or to give you food for marbis. So it sounds like neshach refers to money, and ribis refers to food. So why is the Mishnah not telling us that? Why is the Mishnah telling us then that Neshech refers to lending money and Tarbis refers to lending food and expecting more back? What do you think? There can actually be a case of Neshech without Tarbis or Tarbis without Neshech? Again, Neshech meaning where you're Neshech, where you're biting, you're taking away from the other person without you yourself getting an increase in that way, or Tarbis without Neshech. How do you have such a thing? Neshech v'le tarbis hechidomi. How do you have a case where you think there could be neshech without tarbis? If you're going to say, for example, that he lent him 100 prutos, that he lent him 100 prutos, b'meyav esrim, with the understanding that he's going to pay back 120, where me'ikra kaimi me'ya b'danka, or l'saif kaimi me'ya b'esrim b'danka, where, let's say, in other words, the value of prutos themselves fluctuates, as we learned from the previous parak, that the copper can fluctuate relative to silver. So let's say at the time you lent it to him, it was 100 prutas were going into a danka, into a ma. Now when he pays back, he's still paying a ma, but now it's worth 120 dinar, 120 prutas. In other words, he lent him a ma, which at the time was worth 100 prutas. Later on, the guy pays back 120 prutas, but prutas have gone down in value. Now it takes 120 of them to make a ma.
And therefore?
Well, therefore, you would argue Therefore, you would argue, Neshech Ike the Kanachisle, the Kashachim Neminid Layoiv, you're going to argue in that case that you have Neshech because he is biting from him. He's taking from him something he didn't give. He gave him 100, he's getting back 120. But the Tirbis Lekha, the left by Ratcha, on the other hand, you could argue there's no Tirbis involved because he's not actually having any, he's not actually having any increase in value. The Danka Oisfeb Danka Kashachim Neminid, because he lent him a Ma and is getting back a Ma. If you're going to argue like that, so, but no matter what, at the end of the day, if you're going to go look at the value of Prutis as they were originally, then you have both Neshech and Tarbis, because to begin with, when you lent it to him and he said at the time, I want 120 back, you were going to get back 20 extra Prutis, which would have been Neshech for Neshech, you're biting 20 extra Prutis out of him, and Tarbis, you have the benefit, you have 20 extra Prutis to work with. And if you go according to how it is at the end, where 120 go into a ma, loy neshech ikav loy tibis ikav. There's no neshech because you're not taking away from him anything that you didn't give him before. You gave him a ma, which at the time was worth 100 purpose. You're getting back a ma, which now happens to be worth 120. And there's no tibis because you yourself are not getting any benefit. Again, how can there be neshech without tibis is the point of the question. Without tibis or tibis without neshech. It sounds like, again, the Torah distinguishes Neshech and Tarbis. But on the face of it, any transaction that would involve Neshech necessarily involves Tarbis, and vice versa. Even in a case like this, either if you look at how the values were originally, you have both Neshech and Tarbis, I'm going to be taking away from you 20 purpose that I didn't give you, and I'm going to be increasing my net worth by 20 purpose. Or if you go by the way things are at the end, you're not losing anything because you borrowed a ma, you borrowed a ma's worth of prutas, you're paying back a ma's worth of prutas, and I'm not benefiting anything. So there's no neshech without tibis. You know, that's what we're trying to figure out. That's what we're trying to
say.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. We argue.
Can you do it with two coins?
We just argued like this. On the face of it, if I lend you 100 prutas and ask for 120 back, but meanwhile, the value of Prithis goes down, and now it takes 120 of them to make a ma. On the face of it, maybe you have Neshech without Tibis. But no, because when I lent it to you and said, I want 120 back, I'm doing both Neshech and Tibis. I'm saying, I want you to give me back an extra 20 that I didn't lend you, and I am going to increase my net worth by 20 Prithis. At the end, though, you're giving me a ma. You're giving me a ma, which is how much I lent you at the time. I lent you a ma's worth of prutas at the time. That's all 100 prutas. That's all at the time 100 prutas could buy something. Now it takes 120 prutas to buy the same thing. There's no neshech involved because I'm not taking away from you anything I didn't give you, and there's no tibis because I'm not increasing my net worth. So again, you don't have one without the other. The two tibis by neshech echidami. And further, let's argue, how are you going to have tibis without neshech? How are you going to increase your net value without having neshech? Id oizif meya b'meya. Suppose that he lends him 100 prutas and says, I want 100 prutas back. The ikra kaini meya b'dankel v'seif meya b'chomsha. Let's say that beforehand it took 100 prutas to make a danka, which is 1/6 of a dinar. Now 100 prutas will get you 1/5 of a dinar. In other words, now the value of prutas has gone up, the opposite of the previous case. Again, if you go by the way it was originally, there's no neshech or tibis, because I'm lending you 100 and expecting back 100. And if you go according to the way things are at the end, there is neshech, because before I lent you 1/6 of a dinar, now I'm getting back 1/5 of a dinar, that's neshech, I'm taking away from you an extra percentage of a dinar, and there's tibis, because now I have a greater net worth. Before I lent you, I had a net worth of 1/6 of a dinar, now I have a net worth of 1/5 of a dinar. So again, how do you have one without the other? Ela Amar Rava, you're right. Iyata moitzel neshech leitibis leitibis leneshech. The bottom line is, it's true, you can't really have neshech without tibis or vice versa. And the only reason why the Torah separates them is to say that if you lend somebody at interest, you are over on two lavs. So if you lend somebody, because inevitably lending at interest involves both neshech and tibis, therefore you are over on both lavs. Okay, so Tosfos says in that case, why does the Torah mention it? Why does the Torah say Kaskach Olesit Meneshech over Mabus Olesit Nachlacha as if it was two different things? Tosfos says, okay, it's just that the Torah varies things to make the language sound nicer. But it's not to say that you can have one without the other. Anytime you do one, you're inevitably being over on both lives, as long as it's Ribis Daraisa, obviously. If it's Ribis Darabanan, then you're being over on the Takana of the Chacham. And we'll continue tomorrow with that, with showing how Neshech and Tavis can both apply to food and to food or to money.
Okay.